recapping where we're at. When we first started Revelation chapter 13, we were introduced to the first beast. And the first beast was described how? What did the first beast look like?
Seven heads and 10 horns.
Okay, 7 heads, 10 horns. And on his heads, Billy, what did he have?
Crowns.
Crowns, very good. And above those crowns, what was written or what was the name?
Lamb of God.
No, not Lamb of God. Blasphemy, right? What did we say blasphemy was? Speaking against God, exactly. And so here is this beast. He sees this beast, and it comes up out of the sea. And what did we say the sea would most likely have represented? Probably all, you know, the people, the nations, the great mass of humanity, if you will. And so this beast rises up. He has 7 heads. When we think about 7, we think about complete. When you think about heads, you think about what? Knowledge. So complete knowledge. The 10 horns. Horns represent power. And so this beast kind of signifies, a beast that has come up out of the sea with all this knowledge and power. And then in verse 2, he likens it to what?
Leopard,
yeah. What else?
Bear.
Yeah, brown. Exactly. And have we seen those before?
Yes, Daniel, yeah. The 7th chapter.
Yeah, Daniel, the 7th chapter. And in Daniel, the 7th chapter, those represented what?
The nations,
very good. And so, verse 4 says, this meeting is being recorded. Hang on, I just lost my screen. Okay, I think we're back. Well, I had a warning that said it was being recorded, but everything else disappeared. So I think I'm okay now. In verse 4, it said that they that worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And we talked about the dragon. Who was the dragon?
Satan.
Satan, right. And so this beast, what does this beast end up representing? Yeah, it's representing the Roman Empire, right? And the Roman Empire worshiped Satan, right? They were persecuting Christians. They were blaspheming against God. Verse 5, they would speak great things and blasphemies against. And it was only for a short time. And they, verse 7, what did they do in verse 7? Yeah, they made war with the saints. And what had been going on for the Christians in Asia Minor? Persecution. So making war with saints. Nancy? Verse 3, I saw one of his heads as if it had been fatally wounded, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. So when I looked at that, it wasn't really clear, you know, was the wound for maybe some of the battles that Rome had had with other people, and they had survived? I don't really know, Nancy. So it wasn't really clear to me exactly what that meant.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
Could it be referring to the beast, not Satan, but in Genesis 3, where
Yeah, bruising it. Yeah, it, potentially. I just couldn't really find a whole lot on that. Sorry. Yeah, no, good question. So as we continue to kind of look at this beast, and we look at verse 7, the beast was making war with the saints. So again, Rome was persecuting Christians. And then we learned in verse 8, who worshiped him? All the people on earth who were what? Who were not God's people, right? And so you were either with God or you were against God. And so those who were against God essentially worshiped him or the beast or were following Rome and ultimately Satan. And then we have this passage or this phrase that we heard to all the churches in each one of their letters to them. It says, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. So what would they be trying to hear right there? What's the message? What would the Christians who were receiving this letter being called to hear?
One would provide some relief.
Say that one more time, Billy.
Asking for when they would find relief from this persecution.
Okay, yeah, they're asking for relief. And then what's the message they're hearing right now?
Endure.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a difference between those who follow God and those who don't. And in verse 10, we see this, it's kind of a warning. If anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity goes. If anyone kills with a sword, he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and the faith of the saints. It's sort of a warning to say, do not try and fight back. You know, don't try and battle your way out of this. It's through perseverance and faith that you're going to endure this punishment that is being currently rendered to you by Rome. So that was the first beast. And then we had just got into the second beast. And we said the second beast, what was the second beast? What did it look like? Okay. Two horns, looked like a lamb, spoke like a dragon. So what did that kind of, what did we conclude that kind of meant?
Dragon
in sheep's clothing. A lamb's clothing, yeah. So there was those who appeared to be of the lamb, which would give you the indication they were of who?
God.
Of God or of Christ. Even to the point they had horns, which would appear they had what?
Power.
But yet when they spoke, what were they really speaking?
False
prophets. So you know me, I like to read ahead and jump to the end. So let's do that now with me. And I just want to show you a couple verses. We're not going to dig in real deep, but I want to let you know how I've kind of come to the conclusion that I think this is representing the false prophets of the day. So the beast representing Rome, and then this representing a false prophet. So turn with me to Revelation chapter 16, verse 13. We're going to read three passages that I'm going to submit to you will kind of give us a better understanding of what this is being described. So Revelation chapter 16, verse 13. And we won't read too far ahead because I still want you to come back for the next few classes. But in chapter verse 13, it says, and I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon, Satan, and out of the mouth of the beast we've been talking about, and out of the mouth of the what? False prophet. So we see something. So let's keep going and see if this carries through. Turn over with me now to chapter 19. And let's go down to verse 20. And I don't feel like I'm spoiling everything because I've read the Bible and it ends well. I promise. So I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but it's okay. Let's look at verse 20. And the beast was seized, and with him who? Okay, now look, the false prophet, what did the false prophet do? Yeah, performed signs in his presence by which he did what?
Deceived
those who had received the mark of the beast and worshiped his image. And these two were thrown in the lake of fire. Now, remember this verse because we're going to lean on this here in a few seconds. Lastly, go to chapter 20, verse 10.
20 what?
Verse 10. 20, verse 10. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophets are also. So now let's jump back over to chapter 13. And let's read a little bit further with those things in mind. Let me get there. Okay. Going back to 11, we described the beast. He spoke like the dragon. Verse 12, the second beast exercises all the authority, right? There's that power coming in of the first beast in his presence. And he makes the earth and those who live in it worship the first beast. So his message is directing them to fall into submission of, you know, the first beast, Rome. Whose fatal wound was healed. He performs great signs. Sound familiar? Didn't we just read that the prophet could perform, or the false prophet could perform signs? Yeah. So that he even makes fire come down out of the sky to the earth in the presence of people. And guess what he does? And he deceives those who live on earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who live on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So a couple things here. Nancy, one, I'm thinking about your question about the wound. Here we see a reference. Is that a previous wound from Christ or from the saints? I don't know. I'm not sure. But it just makes me kind of think about it. But here we see this false prophet, and he has taken on this responsibility, and he is causing the earth to basically be deceived and follow Rome, follow this false prophet. So what might that have looked like in reality? What would the false prophets of the day been preaching in the empire of Rome and those areas around the church? Who would they have been preaching was in ultimate control?
Caesars?
Yeah. What did the Roman Caesars and leaders think of themselves?
They were the Almighty.
They were God, right? And so as they went through and they were leading their people, right? They took on this image of being the ultimate God, to the point where, go back to when we were looking at the pictures of the different churches in the seven locations. What often did you see some of the pictures I put up there? I mean, there's the city, but besides the city, what did we see pictures of?
Temples
and some statues that appeared to look like them, right? How many of you have, you know, statues of yourself around your house or just planted throughout Fayetteville? Or Kurt does, yeah. So what's the point there, right? They thought so highly of themselves. They taught that they were the one, right? So this is where some of that blasphemy is coming in. And they had these temples and they had these statues created. And the false prophets are teaching and telling people what should they be doing, following them, right? And so the false prophets were basically continuing to teach the fact that Rome was the ultimate power, and the leader of Rome was essentially the God that they should be worshiping, right? Okay, let's look at verse 15, and it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause all who do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. if you weren't worshiping the image of the beast, if you weren't worshiping the image of the Roman Empire, what would happen to you? Say it again, Sonny.
Be put to death.
Yeah, there was really no option, right? You either submitted or you risked being put to death. And isn't that what we've been reading the whole time that the Christians were facing, was persecution, right? That was what they've been asking for relief from. Remember, from underneath the altar, how long, vengeance. And so this false prophet basically is seeing to it that those who don't submit will be killed. Sonny?
In fact, some of the Christians were put to death, you know, according to historical history.
Yeah.
And some of them were thrown into the lion's den, and they were eaten alive, you know, because they failed to submit themselves to the will of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
And with regards to the question of the saints who were put to death and under the altar, that's some of the things I was reading this morning, you know, that when you die, you know, what happens, you know? And so when you die, if you've been faithful, your spirit goes to where Christ is.
Mm.
And so those Christians who have died in the Lord, they are with Christ where Christ is in heaven. And so at the end of time, when they bury you, the spirit and the body is going to be reconnected, because you're going to have a new body when Christ comes. And so those Christians who were in the altar and sacrificed heaven, and they are asking God, how long are you going to remain?
Yeah.
While I love?
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. Yes.
There's a note that, you know, it's written by a person, you know, it's not God's.
Sure.
I thought it was helpful beginning of the book, and it says, because Roman authorities at this time were beginning to enforce the cult of emperor worship, the Christians who felt that Jesus, not Caesar, was the Lord, were facing increasing hostility. Some of the church were advocating a policy of compromise, and this had to be corrected before its subtle influence could undermine the leader's determination to stand fast in a perilous face.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there would have been this. I mean, if you're facing death, if you're given those alternatives, death or compromise, there were probably those who made the decision to save their life, their physical life, at that time. And so that's, you know, again, we see application to us today clearly. But during this time, this was who this letter was written to, and they were definitely having to make those decisions on a regular basis. Thank you for sharing. Verse 16, let's read on. And he, and now who's the he we're talking about, just as a quick reminder? The lamb with the horns, right? He causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, and the free and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hands or on their foreheads. And let's read on. And he declares that no one will be able to buy or to sell except the ones who have the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Okay, so we'll stop there for just a second. This is a really popular place for people to go. They love to jump down to, well, let's just jump in. We'll just go there. 18. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666, right? Everybody knows that number, so we'll get there. But, yeah.
When Carrie and I first dated, we started meeting my relatives, who accused me of having 666
relatives. 666 relatives.
Just thought I'd throw that
in. Yeah. We'll get there. We're not going to go there, but I'll leave that between you, Carrie, and your relatives. But we'll talk about the 666. So a couple things going on here, right? So this prophet who's deceiving and causing people to fall into emperor worship and blaspheming God, right? Verse 15 tells us who was susceptible to that. Was it just a certain set of people?
Well,
No, it's everybody. It's the small and the great. It's the rich and the poor. It's the free and the slaves, right? Everyone was being pushed to follow this path, to follow Satan. And they were given a mark on their right hands or their foreheads. So let's talk about this. Where have we seen a mark or mention of a mark before? Who was marked? The faithful. And what did that mean?
They were of God.
They were of God. And if they were marked, maybe not a physical mark, but what does that mean?
They're his possession.
They're his possession, exactly. And who would know that?
Christ.
Yeah, Christ would know that, right? The angels, exactly. So this idea of marking is more of an identification of, hey, in previous chapters, these were God's people, right? In this chapter, who are the marked now? Whose people are they?
Satan.
Yeah, they're of Satan, right? And it didn't matter, verse 15, 16, doesn't matter if they're small or they're great or they're rich or they're poor or they're free or they're slaves. They've been marked of Satan, right? They have chosen the path of following Satan. Sonny?
The question is this, are we marked today?
Yeah.
And because a lot of people have used that passage for whatever they want to do. Don't use the credit card. You know, don't take the vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things that people are just worked up about.
Yeah.
But the question is this, are we marked today as Christians?
Yeah.
Because we belong to Christ. We are the servants of Christ. We serve him. Christ knows us by name. And the devil knows those that belongs to him also.
Yeah.
And so they know the work of the devil.
That's right.
But we as Christians in God's kingdom, we do the work of Christ. And as a result, we are marked. And our name is written in the book of life. Yeah. If your name is not written in the book of life and you are not marked, then you do not belong to Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's look at verse 17. And this is going to sound familiar because we talked about this before. So see if it brings back some memories of some things we've talked about. And he decrees, so sets this law in place, that no one will be able to buy or sell except who? Which mark? Yeah, the mark of the beast. So who's going to be able to buy and sell in this Roman Empire? Yeah, those who give their allegiance to Rome, those who are following Rome's directives, those who are following Satan. Do you remember us talking about some of the persecutions the Christians faced?
Famine.
Yeah, hunger, right? And do you remember we were talking about those who had oil and those who didn't, right? And we were making the connection that who got to carry on life as normal? The Romans, those who were, you know, following emperor worship and following Satan. Here comes this link again, right? Those who didn't, they were being persecuted, right? They were struggling. And so they weren't identified as those who were of Rome, and therefore they weren't able to necessarily buy and sell and live their lives, right? And so I think that's really important to know. And in verse 18, I love this. He starts out and he says, "What here is what? Here's wisdom. Here's wisdom. What is wisdom? Well, if somebody's getting ready to tell us, here's wisdom. Let's understand what wisdom is. Let him who has an understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. So if you're going to be wise, what do you need to understand?
That all this comes from Satan.
This is all from Satan, right? And even beyond that, this whole marking, this number 666, and we'll talk about the number in a second. But what should you be able to do?
Tell.
Say it again, Chris.
Should be able to tell.
You should have wisdom, knowledge to tell who's what? Who's faithful? And who's of man, right? That is wisdom. Here's wisdom. Let him who has an understanding. What would they have an understanding of?
What they were standing for. What side they stood on.
Yeah, what side they stood on. everything that has been talked about so far, the fact that God is ultimately in control. Those who have wisdom understand, right? Understand, calculate. So calculate means to identify, to determine the number of the beast. So understanding who has been marked of Satan. So this number 666. Yeah, Chris. Is it a hard one?
No.
Okay, you can ask it.
Well, more like, I thought I read that, that the numbers equivalent to letters.
Okay, we'll go there. I've got, there's someone who says that, yeah. Go ahead.
That's okay.
Okay, yeah, I'll share with you one that was interesting. Now I'm going to share with you what I've read and what I've studied and what seems to make the most sense to me on this. We've talked a lot about numbers, and if I mention the number seven, what number do you, what does that bring to mind?
That would make 666 incomplete.
Billy. Man, I love it. Yeah. So when we think about seven, we think about being complete, right? Whole. And so six is not seven. So it's approaching, but it's not there, right? And so what I would submit to you is this mark of those who were, remember, we're talking false prophets. So, and the people were following them. So they were of the mindset of pursuing God. It just happened to be they were pursuing an emperor, right? So they are not complete, right? And so those who were marked 666 were not complete. And so if, as I read on, it comes to mind that this number would seem to be just falling short of being complete, those who would have been of God. And then one other note, let me find it. So six would mean missing the failure. Where was it? Okay, here it is. So in this one individual that I studied, they made a comment that if there was any merit that the number represented anybody at all, maybe it would represent Domitian, the ruler under John's day. But the most reasonable explanation seems to simply be that 666 falls short of perfection. He went on to say, in the Sibyllian oracles, books by the Sibyls of Greek and Roman antiquity, they also used the number 888. And the number 888 was used in those books to represent Jesus Christ. In other words, he goes far beyond perfection, far beyond 777 and the beast 666, which falls short. So again, I don't think there's something specific about the number. I think it's trying to convey the message that they were falling short. They were marked as sinners. They were marked as those who pursued Satan. Just like other numbers in the book convey messages, this was one to convey a message that they were of Satan. I'll come back to you. Larissa, I think I saw your hand first. Yeah.
And so it was kind of a counterfeit sermon. So a counterfeit bill looks really close to what it wants to be, but
yeah,
it's still false. So it kind of reminds you, like 666 is close to seven, so it'd be more deceptive, right?
Yeah.
It'd be almost perfection.
Not quite. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, think about gemologists, right? You know, when you take your diamond rings in and you know, to those of us who don't know anything, they all kind of sparkle and they're clear and, you know, our wives like them, right? And so, but a gemologist can actually tell the difference between real and man-made. And so, yeah, I like that. It's close. It looks almost, but it's not quite there. That's really good. I need to answer Chris's question, then I'm going to hit Corey, and then I'll come back to Nancy. So Chris had made the comment, you know, there are those who submit that the letters or the numbers represent something in the alphabet. I don't think that there's any accuracy in that. And this author told a story. So I'm just going to share this. So, because I think it's interesting. But again, I don't believe that you use the numbers. I don't believe there's some sort of secret decoder ring that you have to calculate from numbers to alphabet to then find the spelling of who this is, right? But this is how people will take scripture and just misapply it. He said, many have taken the number and tried to interpret it, the view of ancient customs of giving a man a number, and made up the numerical value of the letters in his name. They've added them together. Letters had numerical values, and so by adding values together, a name could be arrived at. Some men have decided this must refer to Muhammad, Pope Benedict. Sorry, we did bring up the Pope. I was asked if we were going to talk about some of the people. Some have said it is Napoleon. Some have said it is Martin Luther. Some have said it is Muhammad. This writer even saw one who said it referred to Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of the State of the United States. He assigned the value of 6 to the letter A, the value of 12 to the letter B, and so on throughout the alphabet, increasing the value of each succeeding letter by 6. Then adding together the numerical value of Kissinger's name, you get 666. Folks, those have nothing to do with the message that Christians were receiving this letter to. That is why time and time again, we have emphasized this letter was written to the churches in Asia Minor to encourage them to carry on, to encourage them for patience because of Roman persecution. So when we take things out of context and we misapply them, I think you can see how dreadfully wrong this can go. And isn't it interesting that the passage talking about false prophets is the part that gets abused the most when it comes to using the number 666? So this furthering of this false teaching is actually talking about false prophets. Okay, Corey? Oh, well, good. Check, answer that one. Nancy?
Oh, seeing that 6 is repeated 3 times is like a spiritual number. In Ephesians 6, it says that we have a spiritual warfare.
Yeah, that's good. So ultimately what I would tell you is these beasts, the first one represents the Roman Empire. The second one represents false prophets that are encouraging and continuing to propagate that Rome is the end all and be all. We see the punishment and the persecution that's we've already heard referenced. When we go back to the messages to each one of the churches, we see it being repeated here. We see the false prophet teaching that, right, up to the point of death. And so I think these are what are being identified in chapter 13. Any questions? Kurt?
One of the things that I like about the way you just described the number 666 falling short of 777, I think it can be tied to intent. So a lot of times we go back and look at 666 and say, those are people who are actively worshiping Satan. But I don't think that's necessarily true. It's people who may be good people, but they're not serving the Lord. So since they're not serving the Lord, they're serving Satan.
Yeah.
So I think that the number of coming close but falling short can be applied to how we live today.
Yeah, good comment. All right, let's turn to, we've got some time left, so let's go ahead and turn over to chapter 14. And we'll go ahead and start here. So chapter 14, verse 1 through 5. Then I looked, and behold, the Lamb was standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 who had his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. So let's stop there. So he's looking, right? Again, still seeing, this is John, still seeing this vision. And who does he behold?
Christ.
And where is Christ? Okay, what would be significant about him being on Mount Zion? What was Mount Zion known as? It signifies God, right? So here he sees the Lamb, he sees Christ, and he's standing on Mount Zion. He is with God, the place of God. And with him is who? The 144,000. So we talked about the 144,000. So real quickly, jump over to Revelation chapter 7 again. And let's look at verse 3. So the angel had been told, do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the bondservants of our God on their foreheads. So the those who were of God were identified. And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000, and it goes from the different tribes. And so when we studied that, what were the conclusions that we came to? Is this a literal number? And why is it not? Okay, it limits God, who he's going to save. And they're only from the tribes of Israel. So if that was a literal interpretation for those who are not of the tribes of Israel, guess what? You have no hope, right? This was a letter to bring hope, right? So that is not. And then we went on to read that in addition to the 144,000, there were more, right? How many more were there? There were countless. Too many to count. Exactly. So you can't just stop at the 144,000 and just say, well, okay, that's it, right? You read through and there's countless, too many to be numbered, those who were marked. And so these are the people of God. And so when we look at chapter 14, John is looking up, he sees Christ, he's with God, and with him are the people of God, right? The people of God who had his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. What were they? They were identified. They were marked, right? How were they marked? They were marked as faithful, right? Just like those who were marked as unfaithful. These were marked as faithful. Verse 2, and I heard a voice from heaven, like the sound of many waters and the sound of a loud thunder. Have you heard that being described before? Yeah, that's a common way we've heard that. What does that call to attention? Like many waters, what does it sound like? It's loud, yeah. Thunder, it gets your attention, exactly. And the voice which I heard was like the sound of a harpist playing on their harps. What does that call to mind? Beautiful, yeah. And so here's this voice. It's loud, it gets your attention, and yet it brings joy. It's going to be soothing. It's going to be something you want to listen to. And what's going on in verse 3? And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one was able to learn the song except the 144,000 who had been purchased from the earth. So let's talk about this. They're singing a new song. Have we heard that before? Who's singing the new song? Those around the throne. So they're singing a new song. They're before the throne. Guess who comes back into the message here? The elders, right? Remember them from the throne scene? Who did that represent? How many elders were there? There were 24, potentially representing what? 12 tribes, 12 apostles, all the people of God. So they are there. The beast, the great beast are there. And no one was able to learn the song except who? Yeah. Who knew the song of worshiping God but the people of God? And how did they get there and where did they come from? Read the end of that verse. They were purchased. How were they purchased? The blood of the Lamb, right? And where were they from?
From the earth.
From the earth. So they have gone through the persecution. They have been struggling, and yet there is a reward for those who have persecuted, those who were killed, by the Romans. There's a place for them in heaven where they will sing a new song, where they will be identified as God's beloved, and they will be there with God and the Lamb. Verse 4, these are the ones who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are celibate. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been purchased from mankind as first fruits to God and to the Lamb. So in the Old Testament, oftentimes we hear of the relationship between God and his people, like between a husband and wife, right? The difference between defiling yourself with a woman would be like tying yourself to a false religion or false practice, right? The worshiping of or being with harlots, right? So the people who are in this scene, who are singing the new songs, they're not the ones who have gone off and tied themselves to other people, right? God in the Old Testament was constantly worried about his people marrying who?
Foreign
wives. Because what happened when they did that? Right. They were defiled. They went with them. They started worshiping their gods. The people in this scene who are worshiping God, those who are going to seek, who receive this reward, they're not the ones that did that, right? They're the ones who followed Christ wherever he went. And it says, these have been purchased from mankind. So they've come out from mankind, come out from the sea, if you will, as the first fruits to God and to the Lamb. First fruits. Why would they mention first fruits? You heard that in the scriptures before? Exactly right. The first fruits were what you brought to God, right? So those who are in this before the throne, they're the ones who were purchased, and they are like the first fruits to God and the Lamb. And no lie was found in their mouths, and they are blameless. So again, hope for remaining faithful to God, right? That's the message that we see. It's going to put them before God ultimately. All right. And I saw another angel flying in the mid heaven with an eternal gospel to preach to those who live on the earth and to every nation, tribe, language, and people. And he said with a loud voice, fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the springs of the waters. We'll stop there. So this angel is flying around mid heaven with an eternal gospel. So the message is, this is for salvation, right? And who's it for? Everyone. So if we go back to this concept of this 144,000, and this is a real number, and you hold it as, this really applies, then that is in direct conflict with what we see here, right? Because what we see here is the eternal gospel was to be preached to each and every nation, all who live on the earth, every tribe, language, and people. Anybody get left out in that? No. Right? And so the message of Christ was for everyone. And the angel tells him, come back Wednesday and you get to hear what the angel, and you can also read ahead like I do. So thank you for your comments and participation. We'll see.